Good morning, everyone. Welcome into our community of sounds and sights, of people and souls, of belief and doubt. We do not claim any special revelation or truth. Rather, when we gather, we are invited to share our wisdom and our questions about life's ultimate mysteries. And in doing so, we grow wiser together. As the world shifts beneath us, we seek steadiness, the unwavering support of community, the principled guidance of wise teachings, the faithful turning of the seasons. We seek within ourselves and in one another a devotion to all that is true, all that is just, and all that is beautiful. We gather here to reground ourselves and to reorient towards our heart's calling. Here, we hold onto what is good, what we believe, and what we must do. With resolute and compassionate hearts, let us worship together. My name is Gavin Byrne, and I'm the minister of this Unitarian congregation. And if this is your first visit, you are particularly welcome. We hope you will feel the warmth and love of this community. And we send our love and our best wishes to those watching us on our webcam, those who cannot be here for all kinds of reasons, and to those who are getting a bit of work done in hospital. You are welcome. When Unitarians gather in prayer, worship, and companionship, we light a chalice. The chalice is a symbol of our faith, and like our faith, it is not magic, nor is it mysterious. We light it as a reminder of what we share as a community and of who each of us is called to be. And so we pray that when we feel lost in a chaotic world, may the light of our chalice show us our way. When we are afraid of the times we live in, may the light of our chalice give us courage. When we despair at the injustice and cruelty around us, may the light of our chalice recall us to a faithful hope. Our chalice is a symbol of our commitment to each other and to ourselves. And we light it today as a gathered community that we may understand more completely and act more boldly and hope more fiercely. And now our first hymn this morning is number 39. Bring, O Morn, Thy Music. And now let us read the words that express all that brings us together as a loving Unitarian community. Love is the doctrine of this church. The quest of truth is its sacrament, and service is its prayer. To dwell together in peace, to seek knowledge in freedom, to serve human need. To the end that all souls shall grow in harmony with the divine. This do we covenant with each other and with God. Our first reading this morning will now be read by Tony Roach.
Morning, everybody. Thank you, Gavin. Well, no surprises that I'm going to read a poem by W.B. Yeats. No surprises there. This is not one that's terribly well known, but it's one of my favourites, and it's called... It's a poem about advancing middle age, and it's called What Then? His chosen comrades thought at school he must grow a famous man. He thought the same and lived by rule, all his 20s crammed with toil. What then? Sang Plato's ghost. What then? Everything he wrote was read. After certain years, he won sufficient money for his need. Friends that have been friends indeed. What then? Sang Plato's ghost. What then? All his happier dreams came true. A small old house, wife, daughter, son, grounds where plum and cabbage grew, poets and wits around him drew. What then? Sang Plato's ghost. What then? The work is done, grown old, he thought. According to my boyish plan, let the fools rage, I swerved in naught, something to perfection brought. But louder sang that ghost, what then?
Now, our story this morning for all ages is called How Jacqueline Dupré Came to Make the Cello Her Life. And this is a true story. Once upon a time, in a house filled with the cheerful pitter-patter of piano keys, lived a little girl named Jacqueline. Jackie, as her family called her, loved music more than anything. Her mother, Iris, was a talented pianist who taught Jackie how to sing and how to play. But while Jackie loved the piano, her heart was waiting for a sound she hadn't yet heard. So one cozy evening, just before her fourth birthday, Jackie was listening to the radio. The family was winding down, the room glowing with warm light. And suddenly, a new sound drifted through the speakers. It wasn't high and bright like a piano. It was deep, rich, and beautifully warm, like a big, friendly hug made of music. It sounded like a voice telling a grand, secret story. And Jackie froze. Her eyes went wide and she stopped breathing for a second. The sound seemed to vibrate right through the floorboards and straight into her chest. Jackie pointed to the radio, her face alight with pure wonder. What is that? Iris smiled softly. That, Jackie, is a cello. I want to make that sound, Jackie declared, her voice full of fierce determination. Because she was still so small, her mother bought her a tiny, child-sized cello. And the moment Jackie held it, she didn't see a wooden box with strings. She saw her best friend. And she sat on a little stool, hugged the cello close to her heart, and drew the bow across the strings. Vroom! A deep, joyous note filled the room. Jackie grinned from ear to ear. And from that day on, Jackie and her cello were inseparable. She played when she was happy, she played when she was sad, and she poured all her big feelings into that beautiful wooden box. The little girl who fell in love with a voice on the radio grew up to share that exact same magic with the whole wide world. The story of Jacqueline Dupré. So now let us sing hymn number 354, We Laugh, We Cry. Thank you. So my reading is in two parts. It's the parable of the sower of seeds with commentary from Unitarian Universalist minister John Nichols. So this is from Luke 8, verses 4 to 8. When a great crowd gathered and people from town to town came to him, he said in a parable, "A sower went out to sow his seed, and as he sowed, some fell on the path and was trampled on, and the birds of the air ate it up. Some fell on the rock, and as it grew up, it withered for lack of moisture. Some fell among thorns, and the thorns grew with it and choked it. Some fell into good soil, and when it grew, it produced 100-fold. And Jesus said this. He called out, "Let anyone with ears to hear listen." Imagine you are having a conversation with four friends, and you tell them something that is really important to you. What you have to say speaks to the heart of who you are and what you believe. The first friend takes issue with what you are saying before you even express half of it. The last thing you expected was a debate, but he seems intent on shattering your thought upon the grounds of logical or empirical analysis. The second friend doesn't really hear you at all, doesn't understand where you're going with the thought, because he isn't really listening. It is as if your seeds are falling on rock and rolling right off. The third friend does understand some of what you are saying, but relates it so much to her own particular obsessions that she distorts your thought into her own. In the end, this topic is so important to you that it gets caught up in the thorns and cannot be freed. The fourth friend listens very carefully and asks some questions to make sure she understands what you mean. She then repeats back what she thinks she has learned from you. Finally, after pausing to reflect, she responds in a way that makes you feel truly heard. Her response may not be complete agreement, but she makes it clear that something genuine and important to both of you has passed between you. It would probably be a mistake to characterize the first three listeners as insensitive people whom we would rather not have in our lives. At various times, we have had all three of them in our lives, for they are us too. We can spring into debate mode all too quick to pound a friend's feelings into the ground. We can be magnificently deaf even to the people we love. We also can become so enthralled with our own issues that we hear everything as a reflection of our own issues rather than a word from someone else's heart. The truth of our lives is that active listening may not be the mode we revert to most often when we are with other people. It takes an act of self-consciousness and self-discipline to be genuinely with someone else. In the parable, Jesus concludes, "Let anyone with ears to hear listen." But of course, it is not a question of hearing alone. It is a question of being authentically present with minds, hearts, and feelings, and engaged in receiving another person. It's how we want to be. It is not always, maybe not even often, how we are. Perhaps the images of this parable will help us to act out of our best selves. John Nichols. Our meditation today is based on Psalm 139. It's an invitation to silence. It also suggests that whether or not we choose to flee to another, better place, or remain in this place, our place of living, the reality of our lives is very much present wherever we go. And after some time of silence, Josh will play Woodbrook by Micheál Osuluwan. To be present in the life of this place and to the deep that calls unto deep, it matters only that we know there is no place to flee from what presents itself to us here. We can imagine flying to dark green islands, far away in a teal sea bronzed by sunset. But still, the questions and answers will dance within us, knock at our doors, haunt us in the dark. We can imagine pulling up the corner of the summer morning sky and slipping away into a place too strange to name. But still, the questions and answers will glide within us, pound on our doors, call to us in the dark. We can imagine running away to the dark side of the earth, where spices float in the rivers and children nurse at midnight breast. But still, the questions and answers will circle within us, rap at our doors, and touch our shoulders in the dark. For there is no place to flee from the presence that presents itself here, the face we each recognize in the mirror of our lives, the yearning that is the breath in our own breath. Flee to the presence, or stay here for it. It makes no difference, for we are here, present to what presents itself to us. Welcome. Welcome to the silence.
Thank you.
Thank you, Josh. Today's address and musical contributions have a few things in common. Deep spirituality from agnostic places, war and peace, memory and nostalgia. I first brought you an address titled Sacred Listening 3 years ago, and it has become an annual event for me anyway. And today I wish to share some more thoughts on the subject of sacred listening, the act of listening as a spiritual practice. For me, sacred listening, particularly to music, can be a number of things. It can be revelation, prayer, meditation, or encounter. But listening is not just of the ears. If I closed my eyes while hearing you speak, as a hearing person, I will miss much. I will not know how your body is speaking, your expressions or movement. For body language reveals more than words alone. That is a particular gift of those who cannot hear. For listening is taking in the light of your eyes, the lines on your face, and the subtle movements of your limbs. Those of us with the gift of hearing with our ears should also pay attention to the language the body is revealing to us. And what of silence? Listening for the unheard. That is perhaps where sound acquires meaning. This is where listening becomes an act of respect and generosity. It is when I am silent so you can speak. When I wish to share with you a story, a disclosure, a heartfelt emotion, I do need you to listen and not eclipse me. Our reflection on the parable of the sower. Often when someone shares something with us in words, I may find myself eager to tell you my story, but I might just stay quiet and listen to you. So sacred listening is the practice of receiving sound or another person with full attention, openness, and reverence, allowing the sound or the other to become a doorway to presence, to community, to transcendence even, and the encounter of what lies beyond ordinary hearing. And so to our first piece of music. Ralph Vaughan Williams' wife said of him, he was an atheist, but later drifted into cheerful agnosticism. Like so many composers before and after, Vaughan Williams was not particularly religious, despite writing some of the most beautiful music for Christian liturgy. His father was a clergyman, and his great uncle was Charles Darwin. It is said of Vaughan Williams that he developed a deep reverence for the divine, finding profound spiritual meaning in nature. And it was on the eve of World War I that Williams wrote The Lark Ascending. At the time, one reviewer, on hearing it, said, it seems to reflect nostalgia for a partly mythological lost age of innocence. But it is more. It's an ode to a pastoral world that the imminent horrors of the global conflict would destroy. It is a very real expression of dread for what was coming. Incidentally, Vaughan Williams spent 2 years as a stretcher bearer on the front line of the war. Thank you. We move now to the dawn of the next great war, World War II. Sibelius, the writer of our much beloved hymn 159, "This Is My Song," first wrote Andante Festivo in 1922, and he later expanded it in the 30s. And it became a reflection on the impending darkness of the Second World War, described as an emotional balm in a world about to be torn again by war. It's not a nostalgic harking back to a better time. And he conducted its first performance on the eve of the war, and he urged his players to play with more humanity. In the year 2000, as the world said farewell to the most war-torn and destructive century in human history, Carl Jenkins wrote The Armed Man, A Mass for Peace, and he dedicated it to the victims of the Kosovo conflict. It draws on the texts and ideas of diverse religious and musical traditions. We hear elements from the Latin Mass, from the Hindu scriptures. We hear the Muslim call to prayer together with secular poetry from England and Japan. Jenkins described his music as providing spiritual music for secular people, offering audiences a space for comfort and reflection, regardless of their religious affiliations. Jenkins is deeply concerned about the world's current parlous state, meaning full of danger, risk, or uncertainty. Jenkins is concerned about humanity's long search for a form of happiness and fulfillment beyond dogmas and creeds, and the Hebraic duty of tikkun olam, the task of repairing the world by attending to its hurts and its injustices. And this is something I think our Unitarian spirit understands. The Armed Man essentially asks for divine mercy and redemption, a final healing in a universal afterlife, more mysterious and more capacious than the traditional heaven of the chosen and the blessed. Jenkins said that this work was his contribution to the universal cry for peace. And so to each according to their gift, and Jenkins' gift is to bring this powerful music into being. The Armed Man ends with a piece entitled "Better is Peace," and he uses words from the book of Revelation. "God shall wipe away all tears, and there shall be no more death, neither sorrow nor crying, and there shall be no more pain." I am inclined to think that while we may have been told in the Christian scriptures that God shall wipe away all tears and intervene and smite the enemies of peace, my Unitarian soul believes that it is up to humanity to bring peace, and that God, however you understand God, is revealed in our inherent goodness and our ability to end war and destruction. Divine and sacred indeed is our desire to live in peace.
Amen.
Rebecca Dale is a young composer from the UK. She wrote Materna Requiem in memory of her mother who died from cancer in 2010. And in it she weaves in melodies written when Dale was just a teenager and which her mother would have heard. A profound and truly beautiful gift. She wrote Materna Requiem 8 years after her mother died. She says about her music that a song or a piece of music is something that can be a frozen place in time. It offers the listener the capacity to time travel. Remembering, not nostalgia. And often a piece brings you right back to that place of joy or that place of pain. Music indeed carries memory. It evokes experiences long forgotten. So see where this sound brings you. It is Paradisum Interlude. Giorni translates as the days, and it was composed by Italian pianist Ludovico Einaudi. And it's really a reflection on the passage of time, capturing the feeling of looking back on memories and cherishing moments of the past. He was inspired to write this piece by a 12th century folk song that originated in Mali. The song describes the killing of a beloved hippopotamus by a hunter, which led to a long communal period of mourning and lamentation. And if you listen closely, you'll hear the pianist's left hand playing an arpeggio. An arpeggio is where the notes of a chord are played individually in rapid succession rather than all at the same time. It's a repetitive, swaying left-hand sequence designed to simulate a feeling of walking, of meditating, and softly mourning the passage of time. Thank you. And finally, to another war, the war to reverse that most existential threat to our earthly home, climate change. David Attenborough has dedicated his life to bringing the beauty and diversity of Earth's ecosystems into our lives. He has stated again and again that human activity has pushed Earth past its stable climate boundaries, risking irreversible damage to global ecosystems. He emphasizes that protecting wildlife and restoring natural habitats is as vital to fighting climate change as reducing carbon emissions. Now, if you've watched Blue Planet, a key character in all of those programs is the soundtrack. Attenborough says, "We have come as far as we have because we are the cleverest creatures to have ever lived on Earth. But if we are to continue to exist, we will require more than intelligence. We will require wisdom." David himself describes himself as an agnostic. He believes human beings may simply lack the sensory organs to perceive a higher power or greater influence in the universe. So this is the opening music to Blue Planet 2, written by Hans Zimmer, Jacob Shea, and David Fleming. Thank you. now let us sing hymn number 142, Let There Be Light, and after which we will have the collection. Our notices. Thank you, everyone who contributed to our service this morning. You are all invited downstairs for tea and coffee after the service. Our weekly service of reflection in the church continues this and every Wednesday from 1:05 to 1:35 p.m. The next Heart and Soul session will be on Monday, the 15th of June at 7:30 in the vestry. Please reserve your space with Shari. A notice for the Sunday Club parents and volunteers. We will have another meeting next Sunday, the 14th, after the service. If you can't be there and wish to join us on Zoom, please let me know. My email address is in Uskult, of which there are many copies. Please take a copy. My contact details are also on the website. This Midsummer's Day, Sunday the 21st of June, the Mind Travels duo, that's Mark Hutchinson and Josh, will present a new suite of reflections entitled The Wheel of the Year. And it's happening at the Cobblestone Pub at 5 p.m. on the 21st of June, and all are welcome. Our book club is reading You Are Here by David Nichols this month, and they're going to meet on the last Wednesday of the month at 7:30 in the vestry, and that's the 24th of June. Now, before our final hymn, on behalf of everyone here, happy 50th wedding anniversary to the cutest couple in our community. To Bridget and Paul, congratulations. So now let us sing our final hymn, number 108, My Life Flows On in Endless Song. As we have listened to the blessing of music and listening, may we know this ending as more than a time of goodbye. May the warmth of this community and the memory of our chalice flame sustain our hearts and encourage our minds as we engage the blessings of life's challenges and joys. The service has ended. Your service has begun. Go in peace, go in joy, and go in love. Amen.